This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Native American women are almost three times as likely to experience violence as women of other races. In North Carolina, at least 90 indigenous women have been murdered or gone missing since 1994. Advocates say that number is actually higher since law enforcement tends to misclassify crimes against Native women. A recent article in Scalawag magazine examines the relationship between indigenous communities and the police force that is sworn to protect them. Joining us is Antoinette Kerr. She reported on the piece. She reported on this story and is a journalist and a nonprofit leader. We also reached out to the Lumberton Police Department and Robeson County Sheriff's Office. The sheriff said the cases mentioned in the article are not in his jurisdiction. He referred us to the Lumberton Police Department. Lumberton police say they cannot comment. Antoinette, welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
What is MMIW?
MMIW is Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women, and it's actually a national, international crisis that I learned more about, and what's happening in Robeson County is a real microcosm of a larger issue, including a lack of diligent and adequate response from law enforcement.
Well, maybe this can be illustrated by the case of Rhonda Jones, Megan Oxendine, and Christina Bennett Talk. Can you tell us about those cases?
Yes, I started doing research 9 months ago and really made some discoveries that led me to apply for a fellowship to do research with Press On South. And during that time, there were a few things that really came up. People reported on these deaths, and I should note that they have not been determined as homicides. But Rhonda Jones and Kristen Bennett were found on April 18th, 2017, and they were found both found naked. Rhonda's body was stuffed in a trash can. Kristen's body was 50 feet away, and she was found in a meat cabinet. And then June later, Megan Oxendine, who was a friend of Rhonda Jones, after doing interviews with the media and with law enforcement, was also found dead nearby in a field. And my first question to law enforcement is, why hadn't these cases been classified as homicides? So I continued down that path and you know, was alarmed like many people in the community. The medical examiner report says undetermined cause of death. And so that was really my first question, and I started to go on from there and find that there were other things about the case that weren't handled in a way, just as a layperson, as a journalist, that I felt like the media was bringing enough attention to. And then I learned more about this larger crisis with a lack of response from law enforcement in the area of missing and murdered Indigenous women in their cases.
When you say they were not classified as homicides, how are they classified? What's the cause of death?
They are classified as undetermined causes of death. And I have posed to law enforcement, you know, how would Rhonda have stuffed herself in a trash can? How would Kristen have stuffed herself in a media cabinet? And in fact, the gray blanket that Kristen was wrapped in, which is the only item of clothing that any of these women had on, and obviously the gray blanket is not a piece of clothing, they were all naked. So in determining the cause of death, my question for law enforcement is, how is this not considered to be a crime?
And what's their answer?
That the medical examiner said that it was an undetermined cause of death. And so that's where they are keeping things related. There is an FBI reward of $30,000 for information about the three women. I think that they're now recognizing or acknowledging that they are connected in some way, but still not determined to be homicides. So that was the first major flag in my research and doing these stories. Also, noticed that in the autopsy report for Megan Oxendine, that the blanket, that the only piece of evidence the medical examiner noted was he was told to destroy by police and law enforcement there. So this is actually in the autopsy report.
He was told to destroy a piece of evidence?
Yes, the gray blanket that she was found in, he was told to destroy that.
Did this FBI agent think that was peculiar?
I have not spoken with FBI agents. I have sent information. Yeah. These are considered actively open cases. So, as you know, with media, and journalism, we only have access to a certain amount of information for any active open case.
Talk about what they did say, because then they'll say, well, this is an open case, we can't talk about it. But there were some press releases around this, and the characterization of these of the women, of the victims, I think was interesting. We should know about this.
The press releases continued to point to the victim's involvement or past involvement with drug activity. Some of the releases said that they were found in places known for drug and prostitution activity. So a lot of the folks that I interviewed in the community and the families said that they felt like that would make it less likely for people to really come forward or to have a real sense of urgency about the cases. When the toxicology reports came back in each of the cases, the consideration for overdose was not apparent in any of the cases.
So talk about how these cases in Lumberton then fit into the larger MMIW movement.
Well, and I think Crystal can really speak to that. She's a really great advocate here. I connected with her, and she's been doing research. Once I started realizing that this was a larger issue, then we connected together, and we've been able to interview some family members from across the state.
Well, Crystal is Crystal Red Bear Cavalier Keck, who is a doctoral student studying the MMIW movement. She's a member of the Okanichi Band of the Saponi Nation, and she joins us now. Crystal, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me on today.
It's good to have you. I also want to welcome Jane Jacobs, an MMIW advocate who lives in Wilmington but is from Robeson County and a member of the Tuscarora Nation. Jane, welcome to you.
Thank you for having me.
I want to repeat that we reached out to Lumberton Police and Robeson County Sheriff. The sheriff said the cases referred to in the Scalawag article are not in his jurisdiction. He referred us to Lumberton PD. Lumberton Police say they cannot comment. Crystal, tell us a little bit about the question I asked earlier, which is how do the cases in Lumberton fit into the bigger picture?
So let me just tell you about the context of MMIW. So Missing Murder Indigenous Women, it's a movement and it's an epidemic which is currently affecting Indigenous people in Canada and the United States. And that includes First Nations, Inuit, Métis, Native American communities. So it includes all of us. It's been described as a type of genocide, and there's a corresponding movement here in the United States to raise awareness. And it ties in to these women's cases in Robeson County, as well as the case in Chapel Hill. So we need to raise awareness to organize marches. We need community meetings. We also need to build a database. And we need to encourage the police to undergo these type of trainings to let them know that they do have Native American communities in their jurisdiction. You know, like you were saying earlier, Native American women are more than twice as likely to experience violence than any other demographic, and 1 in 3 Natives are sexually assaulted. You know, we need legislation. We have legislation going on now, the Violence Against Women's Act. However, it was stalled in the Senate. I'm not quite sure if anything's been moved forward with it, but we need to focus on legislation here in North Carolina, especially when it comes to the victims like Rhonda, Megan, Christina, and Katina, because, you know, we have to advocate for the families. Like, these families have been through enough. And so that's where I'm calling on advocates of media, the police, community leaders to step up and talk about these issues. And we need to bring these issues up. I know it's not pretty, but we need to bring these issues up into mainstream media.
Well, Jane Jacobs, tell us about your sister, her case, and how mistrust in the police department in your area, in a way, played into making this tragedy even worse.
Yes, sir. My sister, Katina, she was murdered on December 20th of 2018. And we do have 2 people that are in jail, but the information that we have, you know, streets talk a lot and you find out the truth of things. And we've taken the things that we've learned to the police, and they're just at a standstill. They're not believed. There's more people involved in her death. And it's like they don't care. The point of it is that they act like they don't care. The police departments don't. They don't want to give us the information that we need. They don't want to accept the information that we have for them because of the lifestyles that are lived. And the same with my sister on the lifestyle. You know, they say that you shouldn't have been here, you shouldn't have been there, you shouldn't have been doing this or doing that. Wherever anybody is does not make it right for them not to investigate and do what they're supposed to do by the full facts of the law for any victim's family.
Talk about the relationship between, in your case, Jane, your community and the police sort of during all this, not necessarily because of this, but the context in which this unfolds and what is the relationship of trust between police and Indigenous communities?
There is not trust in Indigenous communities, and that's going back for centuries. There's always been a problem that Native Americans are looked as less than our counterparts. And so we don't get the same level of care. So there's not the same level of trust there. And then, you know, Native communities are very small. Robeson County, where I'm from, you know, even though it's a big county, the communities are small. Everybody knows everybody. We know law enforcement. You know, we have friends that their families are law enforcement. So we know what law enforcement does that's, you know, not being seen by the higher ups. So we know the things that are going on. So then that gives us where we have no faith that they're going to do anything for us when you have crooked cops.
Well, Antoinette Kerr, that does bring into question a larger investigation around the police and law enforcement in that area. Talk about Operation Tarnished Badge.
Well, when I started to interview family members and also survivors, people immediately said, "Do you know about Tarnished Badge?" And that was SBI and FBI investigation that started in 2002 in Robeson County and went on for 6 years. 22 law enforcement and, officials were charged with crimes and terminated. Those crimes include firebombing homes, kidnapping, drug trafficking, armed robbery, money laundering. And a lot of those folks are still working in law enforcement in Robeson County today, which contributes to people's distrust of law enforcement and also has people questioning how these particular cases have been handled.
Well, particularly, I guess, I'd like to underscore the point at this moment, so forgive me for interrupting. In a couple of cases, we're talking about individuals who either spoke with the police or had threatened to talk with the police about other murders, perhaps involving drugs, perhaps not. But again, if you have police under investigation for criminal and corrupt activities, and individuals who promise to go see the authorities and then their deaths aren't investigated, this, it seems to me, would lead to a further mistrust.
And the mistrust isn't just within the community. It's also with the FBI that took away Robinson's rights to withhold drug forfeiture money because they didn't trust that they would handle it until 2018. And they regained those rights in 2018, but that's fairly recent for the FBI to even say they didn't trust the department to handle drug investigations.
Crystal Redbear Cavalier Keck, there is another question here that we raised earlier, and I'd like you to talk more about it, and that is the possible misclassification of the cause of death, but also the misclassification of the victims themselves. Tell us more about that.
Right. So what you have to understand, the history of North Carolina and in the Native American communities. So we really had to hide out, and you really couldn't say you were Indian or Native American. So people tend to believe that, you know, there's no more Native Americans living in the state. So when they classify people, they either classify them as white, black, or Hispanic. And I can attest to that. A couple of years ago when I went to go get fingerprints for my job, the man, he did not ask my race and he didn't ask my ethnicity. He listed it as white. And just a month ago, my mom, she had to go to the police to report her debit card stolen, and the police, again, did not ask her classification, and he listed her as black. So, I mean, they don't have any trainings. I worked with the Mebane police chief asking him questions like, is this, like, a training? Is this, like, how do I attack this problem? And he looked through all of his manuals, and there's no manual or no type of police guide that tells people how to classify them. So it's basically on the police officers what he feels like that person is. So if he thinks they're black, then he's going to label them as black. If he thinks that they're white or Hispanic, he will label them. And so that goes forth of there's no data. There's no data that we can track.
What are the consequences of that? And how would it improve the investigation at all if we had better tracking?
Well, if we had better tracking, we would be able to, bring light to an invisibility, lack of resources, there's lack of employment opportunities. If we had these things in our community and saying, okay, hey, this is a problem, we can raise this awareness, this data, there's just a lot of things that resources that can be brought into the community. For example, like the census, like we need people to start identifying as Native American in the communities they live in so we can get more resources to those local tribes in the communities.
Jane Jacobs, the governor, Roy Cooper, has said that has made some efforts to recognize the MMIW cause, and I wonder what your thoughts are on that.
We're very appreciative of it, any attention that we can get that can bring it more to a national spotlight to be able to get more help to these causes that now that maybe that it's national, when we do have a missing Native American woman, there can actually be people that actually look for her other than, family members and friends. Maybe we can get the same kind of resources brought in to help our family members and loved ones as they would across the board on any other race.
Do you know, what about in the legislature? Because it would take, that would be the next step. Are there any moves in the legislature? And do you think there's much sympathy there to get a little action on this?
I think Crystal would be able to answer that question a little bit better than I could.
Crystal, what are you seeing?
So I do think, I really think it was great that Governor Cooper, he raised this awareness. This is the second year in a row. However, I do think there needs to be more form of solid legislation. We have lobbied Representative Charles Graham, Greer Martin, Zach Hawkins, and Ashton Clemens about creating a task force and legislation aimed at this. And they all say that we need to work with the Commission of Indian Affairs to create a statewide action plan. However, I've been unfruitful in my successes of trying to get in connection with the Commission of Indian Affairs. So I have been lobbying my state local representatives. We need a state public inquiry into the actual issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women and focus on exposing the nature of this violence and ensuring government and police accountability for an effective and coordinated response. And that would look like local tribal leaders, local law enforcement, community leaders, and as well as the citizens and victims, the victims' families. They need to be all a part of this this movement. And they need to create and plan and have a dialogue around these eight state tribes and the urban Indian community.
It's much larger in scope as well, Crystal. Talk about the connection to human trafficking and domestic violence here that is all woven into this story.
So it is. So human trafficking, it can happen to anyone. However, it's just happening disproportionately to our Native American people. And the reasons why is the lack of resources, like we talked before, the lack of employment opportunities, prior abuse, substance abuse, intergenerational trauma, and then jurisdictional challenges. We need to heal these communities to unite our tribal nations in order to battle human trafficking. So I don't know if you know Lumberton sits off of I-95. And I don't know if it's a serial killer that's targeting this, but again, without this police focusing on this and talking to other police departments, so like, going across jurisdictional lines, talking to communities, figuring out these pieces, like what's happening in Rocky Mount with those murders that were happening up there back in the 2000s. Did that person move south? Did this cross the border lines in South Carolina? Is it happening in Virginia? And without people working together or having a task force, we can't answer these questions. And, with the research that I'm working on in my dissertation, I'm hoping to be able to either help bring this together and bring the people needed together to bridge this gap, or just create a movement of community leaders in the community just saying, okay, hey, we need answers. This is not getting any better. This has been happening since, 1400s, right? Like, this has been going on.
Well, I want to thank all of you for being on the program. Crystal Redbear, Cavalier Keck, doctoral student studying MMIW awareness. Antoinette Kerr is a journalist and nonprofit leader. You can find her article about missing and murdered indigenous women in North Carolina at scalawagmagazine.org and our website as well, wnc.org, stateofthings.org. Jane Jacobs, MMIW advocate, thank you as well.
Thank you for having us.